you have questions about digital photography, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Photo Focus. Here's your host, Scott Bourne.
Thanks for tuning in to Photo Focus episode 101. Today you just get me. Didn't have time to arrange a co-host, but we'll do the best we can. New format of the show, as you may be aware, is that we're just going to talk about some general photographic topics and then answer a few of the questions that have come in directly for the show. And today I got a couple of topics that I'd like to cover. And the first one has to do with people who seem to believe that they are the priests of the low-light religion. That's right. If you've been around photography as long as I have, you've seen many religions in photography. First, it was the only thing that's true is black and white. When we got color film, everybody was up in arms, and it was all about the black and white religion. And then when we went to digital, it was all about, well, film is better than digital religion. And then when we went to digital, it was all about, well, my camera has more megapixels than your camera religion. And then of late, it's been the, but how does that camera perform in low light religion? As if the only thing that matters about a camera is how well it performs in low light. I realize that this is the popular meme, but promise you that if you listen to any photo podcast 2 or 3 years from now, there'll be a new one. It won't be the low light one. It'll be something else. That'll be passé. So what I want to do today is to try to open up your mind and get you to realize that it is possible to have a good camera, even if it isn't the very bestest, superest, most amazingest, supercalifragilistic, expialidociest low-light performer in the world. And I will actually provide you with some evidence of that. So here's my take on it. Now, just like all of you, I love to have good low-light performance in a camera. Believe me, that's great. The more, the better. But I don't buy cameras because of their low-light performance, and here's why. I don't spend that much time shooting in low light. There's a lot of photography overkill these days. People ask me, you know, what's the very sharpest lens I could buy? And then I find out what they're doing with their cameras is they're taking pictures that'll be 240 pixels wide on a website. I'm like, well, what does it matter? Any lens. You don't need to have the top of the top of the top of the top of the line everything unless you can articulate with specificity why. So for me, for instance, I'm typically working outdoors in decent light. Sometimes I work in, you know, sunrise and sunset light, which isn't super strong, but it's enough to make a good image with almost any camera. And if I were shooting weddings indoors or doing a lot of indoor photography where there was low light, then I might be more concerned about a low light camera. Now, it just so happens I have cameras that perform very well in low light, but that's not why I bought them. And this is what I really want to talk about. Seems to me that many of you are buying your cameras based on their low light performance without any regard for anything else. How many megapixels it has, or how big the buffer is, or what formats the camera shoots in, what connectivity it has, what kind of cards it uses, what kind of lens it takes. You can overemphasize this low light thing to the point where it is a religion. And where we get into trouble in photography is when people have their religions, where all that matters is low light performance. And then I see people actually poo-poo pictures without even really looking at them, saying, oh, that can't be any good. That was just taken with a D7000 or a Canon 60D, whatever. Granted, some of the high-end cameras do much better in low light, but that doesn't mean you need them. That doesn't mean they're required for every shot, and that doesn't mean that they're overall the best cameras on the market. Remember, in the old days, it was how many megapixels. Now it's low light, and trust me when I tell you in the future it's going to be something else. Instead of concentrating on all these features, let me just tell you something about cameras. You may have heard me say this about lenses. 99% of all cameras are better than 98% of all photographers. And I'm not trying to insult anybody, but I'm just saying it how it is. Most of you aren't even beginning to use 20% of your camera's capabilities. The last thing you need to worry about is the religion of low light. And here's another reason why you don't need to worry about the religion of low light. We have these things called strobes and hot lights and flashes and reflectors and bounce cards. Get the point? You can always make your own light. Sometimes it's a lot better light than you can get naturally because you can control it. But if you get into a situation where your low light performance isn't to your satisfactory, just bring some light with you. It's no big deal. I do it all the time, really. So that's one thing I want to cover today. Ask yourself, do you really need to buy the new Nikon D4? Because it will be the best low light performing 35mm DSLR on the market, no doubt about it. Probably a half to a full stop better than the new flagship Canon. And before you all send me email, I have both, so don't accuse me of being a fanboy. I have both and use both. But it is just a fact that the Nikons tend to be a half to a full stop better in low light than the Canon. So if that's all you care about, then the D4 will be the camera you covet. But I don't know, it's $6,000. Do you need it? I don't think so. Now, I happen to own a bunch of D3Ss and one D Mark IVs, so I have plenty of cameras that perform well in low light. However, I use my D7000 all the time, even my iPhone. I use all kinds of cameras. I'm not part of the religion of low light because I can make all the light I want. My goal here today is to get you thinking about other things in the camera other than their low light performance, and remember that that is not the only reason to buy a camera. You can bring light, you can make light, you can find light, so keep that in mind. Don't get too wrapped up in that. Want to also talk about some stuff going on recently over at photofocus.com. In case you don't know, we publish there 7 days a week. And that site, along with this show, are sponsored by some great people, including ViewBug, which is the very best place to go participate in photo contests, in my opinion, and Animoto, which happens to be my favorite way to share my work. You can do cool slideshows with video, music, the whole nine yards. You can try that for free. Also want to say thanks to borrowlenses.com. You can borrow anything in the world pretty much that you can think of for photography there. Don't just think it's cameras and lenses. They have branched out to lighting, video, tripods, you name it. And then Smug Mug Pro, the best place to sell your photos online, in my opinion. I've tried them all. I vetted them all. Smug Mug has the best terms of service, the best way to sell, and they also have the best video. Anyway, over on the blog this week, we've been talking about some stuff. I mentioned Snapseed for Mac. $20 if you want to have a lot of fun. You may also notice that we've been doing some videos, some screen capture type deals. We're going to start doing one or two of those a week, maybe even three, because we've gotten a lot of feedback that you're enjoying them. They're going to be quick 2-minute tips. Let's say you're at lunch, you got 2 minutes, you want to learn something. Boom, you come on over and I show you how to do a trick in Aperture, or Rich Harrington shows you how to do a trick in Photoshop. We may eventually get Lightroom in there. The idea is that we know some of you don't have 30, 40, 50 minutes to sit down and listen to an entire course. You get a couple of minutes a day to work on this between work, the kids, school, whatever you got going on. And our goal is to help you improve every day. So we're starting to throw these videos up there. There's one on Aperture this week. We got tips on wedding photography. And speaking of Aperture, I did kind of accidentally kick off a thunderstorm when I mentioned Aperture 4 on the blog. I have my prediction that it's coming out soon. And when I wrote that story, which appeared on February 1st, it was funny. On February 2nd, I came to work and there was a voicemail on the phone with a blocked phone number from a guy purporting to be an Apple employee saying that Aperture 4 is actually going to be called Aperture 10, in keeping with Apple's move away from super pro apps to more consumer pro apps, to merge like with Final Cut 10, and it'll be out very soon. Of course, he didn't leave his name. I have no idea if it was really an Apple employee, but it does make sense. So that was actually kind of fun. We had a tutorial up there from Rich on how to set your white balance in post. I just want to quickly answer a question I get all the time. People say, well, why should I bother to set my white balance when I can just do it in post? Why should I do it in the camera? Here's why. It saves time, folks. And I'll tell you how. Let's say you're going to be shooting in the same light for the next hour. If you set a custom white balance one time and the light doesn't change, then all the pictures you take thereafter will be very easy to batch process in Lightroom, Aperture, Photoshop, iPhoto, whatever you use. But if you leave it on auto white balance and things change even minutely, the auto white balance is going to change over and over, and you're going to end up having to make lots of corrections you wouldn't have had to make if you'd have just done it in the camera. It's very easy to do. Those of you who say you can't figure it out, well, there's a page in the manual. It tells you how to do it. It takes literally 30 to 40 seconds. So go out there and set your white balance. When the light changes, reset the white balance. Every time the light changes, set the white balance of camera. But if you don't do that, Rich has a little video up on the site that will show you how to do it. I also talked this week about a disturbing trend in photography where I see a lot of young photographers copying each other. And the picture that seems to be in everybody's portfolio, the cliche, and that's very ironic because it's all being done in the name of being new, but the cliche is a very blown out background, backlit subject, like a wedding engagement portrait or a business portrait where the subject's in shade, they're backlit, there's no fill light, it's very strong backlight to where it's flared and all. You see this now on everybody's website. So my challenge to you is stop trying to be new and start trying to be you. Don't just do it because the cool kids do it. Do it because you think it makes sense. So why don't you come up with your own style instead of trying to copy everybody else's? I've asked people why they have that shot, and the few that will be honest with me admit it's because they see everybody else has that shot. Well, you know what? Get your own shot. That's what photography is really about. That's the way to go, and it's just a lot more fun. I talked a little bit about my new computers. I've redone the studio. I'm now working off a 13-inch MacBook Air with the top-of-the-line processor, memory, SSD. And I have to tell you something. It is so much faster than the original one. It's not even like the same computer. It also has way more connectivity. It has an SD card reader, which I love since I'm particularly enjoying the Olympus EP3 lately, which uses an SD card. There's a USB port on each side now. It's an amazing little tool. It's about $2,000 fully configured, which is crazy expensive. But connect that to one of those new 27-inch Thunderbolt LED displays and a Thunderbolt Promise drive, and you've got one of the fastest machines on earth. I'm also using a bunch of the 27-inch top-of-the-line iMacs. The jury's still out for me on that. It may actually be too big a screen, and I don't know. I'm not used to having all kinds of multiple computers with my stuff on it. I'm trying to work with JF Brissett, my buddy over at Apple, to see if there's a way that I can put two Apple cinema displays, 27-inch LED cinema displays, daisy chain through Thunderbolt to my Air. Now that would be cool. I'd have three monitors on the desktop, one little one and two big ones. And I think that might be kind of fun. We did have a guest post from Tamara Lackey this week. We do have one coming in from the lovely Catherine Hall, for those of you that listen to Twit, the new show with Leo that Catherine does is very interesting. I also want to briefly report on some poll results that I found very interesting. I asked, have you ever given serious consideration to publishing a photo-related book? And basically, two-thirds of you said either yes or maybe. So that's something that's on your mind. And that goes in hand-in-hand with another poll I did recently, which I really thought was also kind of fun. Around CES, I started noticing all these cameras. They were in different colors, pink and blue and yellow and green. And I just thought, you know, I've never even thought to buy a camera based on the color it is, and neither have three-quarters of you based on the poll that I recently took, so that's something to think about. Anyway, I'm going to answer a couple of questions that came in via email for you. One came in from Dave Calloway, from WIFC in Wisconsin. He's the morning dude there. Long-time listener of the show. Hope you don't mind me doing a little disc jockey voice for you there, Dave. One of your questions was, how do I store my images? Do I leave them in Aperture or do I put them someplace else? Because when you use your Aperture, you move things over to iPhoto. And yes, you are double saving them and you don't need to. iPhoto does an auto-res thing to your images that I don't like. So actually, except for just snapshots and iPhone pictures, I stay out of iPhoto. If it's in Aperture, it doesn't need to go anywhere else. Leave it in Aperture and be sure to use your Vault. Then you got everything backed up. And by the way, make sure that that vault is somewhere that can go off-site, because if you have a fire, it's not going to do you any good to have all of your backups in one place in the same room. So that's something that I would maybe pay attention. So in any event, that's something to think about. We had another question about DNG. We get a lot of questions about DNG here and what and people want to know what I think about it. Well, here's the deal. DNG is a format started by Adobe. It's designed to be open source and open to everyone, and for the longest time it hasn't been. Now, they either have already switched it to open source or they're about to, and at that point I think the format has merit. But the thing about DNG is that in order for it to work, the camera manufacturers have to supply software developer kits and APIs and all that sort of stuff to Adobe so that they can interlink what's going on. And you have Nikon, who doesn't always play with well with others, and I say that as a Nikon owner. They're trying to sell you a copy of their software, and they're a little bit reticent to give away too much to Adobe to make DNG work. Now, they've gotten much better about this. There was a time when they wouldn't give them anything. They finally did give them some stuff, but you may not get every feature in DNG that you would get if you used a NEF file in the case of Nikon, or, you know, one of the proprietary file formats used by any of the camera manufacturers. Just remember that it's up to them to give Adobe or whoever's controlling the open source product, if it's open source now, hooks into their software. And if they don't, then DNG will only be as good as what they get. So I'm not personally somebody who is a big believer in DNG. There is one big advantage of it, though. If you're working with something like Adobe Bridge and you have all those sidecar files, the nice thing about DNG is it gathers them up and puts them in one place, so you don't have to worry about losing the sidecar file that goes along with your photo file. That sidecar file is just a little text file that has all the instructions that relates to what happened to your picture. And if you just convert to DNG, those all go into one image, which I really do like. So that is an argument for DNG, but I haven't really stayed up on it, to tell you the truth. There's so much going on in my life that paying attention to DNG hasn't been the best priority. But you know, if Adobe has or does release it to true open source where they no longer control it, and if the other camera manufacturers will get along with Adobe and do the right thing, then we got a real chance of maybe seeing DNG take off and become, you know, something that we can all use. I do want to take a second to point out that this show's airing on the 5th and on the 18th in Las Vegas at the Hampton Inn. Skip Cohen and I, along with Michelle Colantano, will be doing a all-day workshop called the Going Pro Bootcamp. Nothing related to photography. It's all related to the business of photography. We're not going to teach you how to take pictures. We're going to teach you how to sell them. It's $99. You can get information at goingpro2010.com. There are some seats left. It's going to be a small conference. We're limiting it to about 70 or 80 people. There will be just a few vendors there. Nobody's going to try to sell you anything, though. Once you pay, you actually get all the information that you're entitled to. You don't have to pay and then hear a commercial to buy something else. We're not going to let that happen. We're going to give you everything we got in the way of information to try to help you sell pictures. That's going to be happening right then and there on the 18th. I should mention that this show publishes on the 5th, 15th, and the 25th of every month, but that could change. March 25th is tentatively scheduled to be the last episode of Photo Focus as we know it. Now, the site is not going away. PhotoFocus.com will be there for a long time. We continue to publish daily. Nothing's going to change there. We're just probably going to add more videos and tutorials there and maybe cut down on the audio stuff. We may, however, do some Google Hangouts, do some live stuff over YouTube or one of the various places that lets you do live video. We're also exploring maybe bringing in another host and continuing the show in a different format. But until the 25th, you can count on us being here the 5th, 15th, 25th of every month. I would make sure that I had gone through the RSS feed and downloaded all the old shows, because there is the possibility that those will all go away, because we pay a bunch of money to keep that stuff on the server. And if we decide to stop doing the show, we're going to stop paying that huge bill. Just so you know, the podcast is the most expensive, time-consuming part of what we do and provides the least revenue, generates the most complaints. So with all that in mind, it seems easier to concentrate on PhotoFocus.com, where we have massive traffic and it just grows every year. I'm not willing to just walk away from this. Like I say, we're looking at alternative solutions. A lot of people have been asking me to do this on a Google Hangout basis, Google Plus Hangout, so we might do that. We will definitely do more videos. We're already doing more videos. Rich and I are doing screencasts once or twice a week, as I said. So something will keep happening. We're not sure what. Stay tuned for more information. But as we are used to doing on the 5th, 15th, and the 25th, there's a good chance that that's going to change somewhat at the end of March, just giving you fair warning. All right, well, that's all the time we have for today. It's a short show because it's just me. If you have questions, comments, or concerns, send them to photofocus@me.com. I'll do my best to answer them. Follow me on Twitter, Scott Bourne, all one word, S-C-O-T-T-B-O-U-R-N-E. I do give stuff away all the time on Twitter. To find out what I'm giving away next, well, I'll just tell you what it is. On March 1st, I'm giving away your choice. Canon or Nikon, 70-200, f2.8. It's top of the line, the latest version, state-of-the-art lenses. They're about $2,500, no matter which one you pick. Also throwing in a entry-level camera body, Canon or Nikon, your choice. It's a very nice prize package. All you have to do to be eligible is send a tweet. You can find out about that at searching contest on photofocus.com, or just follow me on Twitter, because about once a week or twice a week I do mention how to enter those contests. I don't answer any questions about those contests because it's all there on the site. And if I did answer questions, that's all I do. I would literally not do anything else. But thousands of you have figured out how to enter it, so I know that it's not that far off. We'd love to have you participate. Maybe you'll win. One of my favorite things in the world to do is give away cameras and lenses and stuff like that. I also will have a brand new contest starting March 1st. Not sure what it's going to be for, but it might be for one of those cameras coming out that's not out yet that I think a lot of you would be excited about. But I'll just leave that teaser out there for you in the meantime. So that's all I got for you today. Thanks for listening. We're here again on the 5th, 15th, 25th of every month. The address is photofocus@me.com. The Twitter account is Scott Bourne. And I'm going to leave you like I always do. Go out there and make pictures. Don't just take pictures. We'll see you on the next Photo Focus.